Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Tom Hosty-Cundell, the petrol station flowers for Valentine's Day of the podcast, better than nothing, but still the non-football equivalent of Rafinha at wing-back. And I'm joined today by the player scoring against his former club of the podcast, Martin Riley. It's a nice gesture, but still hurts like a Cupid shot arrow. And finally, I'm joined today by the newest addition to the AAW family, which I don't know why I've said it like that. But what are you doing on the podcast on Valentine's Day? You're an attractive young man, Will. You're at uni. How are you? What are you doing?
Whoa, I'm doing good. I've had a good day, despite no dates. I went to athletics, I saw the boys, got myself a little takeaway for when we talk about food. It's been a good day, yeah.
So hang on a minute. So you've just said you do athletics. So for those who don't know, Will is a medium distance runner. So, and then you've had a takeaway. So yeah. Are we ruining you? Because you had like noodles on toast or something on for the first, for your first appearance. And then you've had like pizza today. Are we ruining you already?
No, I had Middle Eastern, half a grilled chicken and chips with salad and it was lovely.
That sounds great to be fair. Sounds like a very good takeaway.
Yeah, there's just a little place, like a 5-minute walk away. So I've been there quite a few times this year and will continue to do so.
Are you on first name basis?
No, they recognise me, but I don't know their names.
Not as bad as the takeaway that was 5 minutes around the corner from my house and it'd be 4 o'clock in the afternoon coming back from uni. I'd be walking past and it'd be shouting, "Hey, Hosty! Hey, Hosty!" Yeah, that my mate looked at me and just went, "That's not good." But what is good is Martin Riley. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I've had a lovely tea tonight. I had a jacket potato for a change with some cheese and beans and some spicy chicken to go with it. And it was very good. Lots of cheese because I love cheese. And not just that, two types of cheese. I had both double Gloucester cheese and then also a big dollop of some garlic and herb. This like soft cheese, which was really good to go on.
Boursin.
Sort of melted.
Boursin sort of
the
stuff.
Beans. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, that does sound good. I had a Sainsbury's spicy chicken and Andouille pizza. Quick 10 minutes in the oven as I messaged you guys. Before we started recording, that was running a bit late, and so we pushed back recording a little bit for me. So thank you very much for that. And so that's everything. News will be covered tomorrow in the preview. It's easier to talk about the news because the news is basically about Bamford in this game pulling out. Injured. So I guess you can talk about whether his selection's coming tomorrow or not for the preview of Plymouth. But yeah, we're here today to talk about our 4-0 victory over Swansea City. So I will start with a game summary. So both teams started the game with the same 4-2-3-1 structure. Leeds had the greater share of possession throughout the first half, with Swansea having some spells of possession. However, Leeds had the greater share of shots and good chances. Leeds started strong, having a number of early opportunities and scored the first goal in the 8th minute, with Crescencio Somerville firing a deflected effort past Rushworth. This was followed up 2 minutes later when Joel Perreault struck a shot with his right foot and Rushworth parried it into the corner. Leeds continued to apply pressure and had a number of good chances, with the third goal being scored in the 35th minute, with Willy Nyonto firing a well-placed shot into the bottom corner, and the game entered the second half 3-0. The second half continued with much the same as the first. Leeds had a great share of possession and most of the chances, with Swansea not being able to create many good chances with the possession that they did have. The only goal of the second half arrived in the 72nd minute, where Willy Nyonto was scoring again and bringing the score to 4-0 and making it 7 wins out of 7 for Leeds in 2024. That's obviously in the league. So, with that over and done with, we'll start with the interrogation. And yeah, I think we were relatively hopeful before the game that we were going to win this one. But I don't think any of us really saw that it'd be that convincing. 4-0, obviously. So, Will, I'll go to you first. What do you think the biggest reason was for that scoreline?
Am I allowed to say a little bit of good fortune? Because I think with both the first goals, the first and second, deflection, and then with Pirro's, I think the keeper should have done better. Between those, to be 2-0 up so early, it just sets the rest of the game up to be nice, as long as you're not stupid, which we weren't. So, happy days, really.
Yeah, I think you're allowed to say that a bit of luck came into it. And Martin, did you see it any differently?
I agree with what Will said, that there was definitely some good fortune with the first two goals. But I also just think that there was quite a big differential physically between our players and Swansea players. Our players just had the beating of Swansea players in most one-on-one battles. That was set very, very early with Routier just totally turning. I think it was Fulton, I think about 30 seconds in, I believe, just literally received a ball with his back to Fulton and just bun away from him, was driving him, leaving him a good fair bit behind in seconds. So yeah, there was a big physical mismatch for me. And another one which was present throughout was on the right hand side. Nyonto had the beating of, who was there, left back again? I forget his name.
Tymon?
Oh yeah, Josh Tymon. Yeah.
Yeah, he had the beating of time and time again. and he also had the beating of Wood as well, the left sided centre back. So the number of times where just his movement just caught them totally. I want to say by surprise, but I think they could see it coming, but they couldn't really do much to stop it. They set off like a second later than what they should have done. Nyonto was well past them, and it just made their life very difficult that there was this big mismatch between us and them physically. And then there's also the issues with, I think, Swansea's players are not really that familiar with what Luke Williams wants them to do, both in and out of possession. And I think this especially was shown in their out of possession approach. And we won't touch on that too much because the next question is about that entirely. But there were definitely some things which Swansea weren't doing, which I think Williams would have wanted them to do. And so it didn't really bode well for them, I guess, especially against a team like us who are quite well drilled in what we're doing at the moment in great form. So that combination of the physical mismatch and the team early into a process was never only going to end one way, really.
Yeah, I think, like what Will kind of said, for me, early goals made a big difference for this, for game six. It meant that Swansea really had to try and get a goal. And we've seen that with the Christmas Eve game against Ipswich, that when teams come at us like that, we perform really well against them. And yeah, I just felt like that's kind of one of the reasons why yesterday was, because they're trying to play a bit more of an expansive game compared to what they had under Duff. And yeah, I think when you're making that transition from what they were under Duff to what Luke Williams probably wants them to be mid-season as well, I think that's where like we get that advantage over it as well. Like you were saying, Martin, they're probably not quite prepped and not quite there into how Williams wants to play. But yeah, as you mentioned there, Martin, how did Swansea approach us in out of possession, and why wasn't it that successful?
Well, there was a few things he was trying to do. They were trying to press high in moments. It wasn't full on high press, as in committing all of their players for it at the same time. They were trying to keep bodies in our half, but there was some time that I don't think the lines of pressure were moving in a concerted way to keep that pressure up. For example, I think around, I want to say about 5 to 10, I can't remember the exact time, but between 5 and 10 minutes. There was a moment where we'd push forward and then we sort of recycled the possession back to our back line. And now obviously what should happen in that is the midfield line move up with the forward line. But the forward line moved forward to press our players, but the midfield line didn't compensate for that. So you had a situation where I saw a groove. Just look behind his shoulder, see not a single person there. He was like just ahead of the circle above our box, and it was like a good 15 yards with no one in it at all. And just, you can't have that big gaps between your first and second line. Just especially not with players like Groove who can pick a long pass out. And that's exactly what he did. He turned around, drove into the space and hit a really lovely diagonal ball down to, I think, Nonto. And so, yeah, that part of it was not working well. And I don't know if that is players not knowing what to do, but to me that seems quite an elementary thing to do. And I don't think it would be something which Williams would be wanting them to do, to leave that such big of a gap between the first and second line. So for me, whatever they were trying to do wasn't being enacted very well, in my opinion.
Yeah, Will, do you have anything you'd like to add on that?
Yeah, sort of on to what Martin said about being a little bit disjointed is at Notts County, Williams at times, County would be vulnerable to someone springing the offside trap or a third man run in behind the high line. So playing the high line that they sort of were trying to do, but then not putting pressure on midfielders that are as competent as Gruev, yeah, you're asking for trouble. And that's what we saw, basically.
So, yeah, and with the way that Swansea did set up, we created two chances per XG that you class as big chances. So that's over 0.3 XG. And another four chances, which weren't technically big chances, but we'd probably say they were still good chances. And so how were we able to create so many good chances, Will?
Through transition were quite a few of them, especially early on, even not the big chances, with Nonto's one at 2-0 came on the counter. So did Pirro's that he scored. Yeah, transitioning. And I thought, just in general, our right-hand side was really good yesterday. Gray and Nonto, as they've played together more, I think increasingly is a really good partnership, that the movement they have, like for Nonto's goal that he did eventually score, the first one, with winning the ball back, and then Gray with the lovely ball over the top. It's just nice to see.
Yeah, Martin, do you see any other reasons why we managed to create so many good chances?
I think we'll hit a lot of them there. There was just so much space for us to attack, especially in transition. It just really did make our lives that so much more easier. Mind not just the space behind their line, like I've already mentioned, space in between their lines. They've just making our life so easy. And to a team like us, who's already good in transition, to leave that much space open, it's just asking for trouble. And it just made it a pretty easy game. Like, even without the good fortune for the first two goals, I don't think it would have taken as long to craft a goal, which wasn't down to good fortune because of how open the game was. And that was an easy way for us to get the win, which I was kind of a bit disappointed. I was hoping for a closer game, to be honest. Maybe I'm a bit of a sicko in that way. But yeah, it's a shame. But hopefully Williams can get them playing better than that, because I think even despite the disadvantage they've got in player quality, I do still think that he should be able to do better than what he did in this game.
Yeah, I think by a close game, I think what you all mean is that you kind of expected maybe to see a bit more from Swansea, or you were hoping to see a bit more from Swansea given Williams' reputation that he brought from Notts County. But as we've said, more of a tactical battle of what I guess is what more you're trying to get at there. But speaking of what Swansea did do quite well, there were some people griping about the ability that Swansea had to play through our press. Do you think this was down to Swansea's on the ball tactics and ability, or do you think that our press was not really stopping that? And do you think if it is that, does that concern you, Martin?
Well, I saw some people who were complaining about Swansea playing through our press, but for me that is just something that will happen, especially a guy like that we're good at coaching teams to be able to play through a press. It's one thing which he was very good at Notts, and it's no surprise that he's been able to do it. That's one of the, because Swansea have been for a long time known as a team who do like to possess the ball, so they are going to have a good standard of players for the on-the-ball football, and they do. In their back line, they've got a few capable ball players, and that's why they were able to play through our press. But why it didn't concern me was they weren't able to create any chances. They were able to get to the final third, but then our box defending was superior to what theirs was. And there were at times where we were leaving a fair bit of space for them to attack. They did catch us in transition a few times, but even without that, they just didn't manage to get the right pass at the right moment. The players weren't able to execute the right pass, or it just was the wrong pass which they picked in that moment. So I think the pressing side, I think it was a little bit down to us not maybe pressing as intensely as what we wouldn't do normally. And that is something that which we have gone away from home in a few games, especially since we've had a pretty hectic schedule recently with a game at the weekend and a 120-minute game last week. So we weren't going to be able to do a full press for the full 90 minutes. And on top of that, one of our best pressing players was caught out in the warm-up and pulled out of the game. So that also will have impacted it. But to me, I don't think we will have been intending to press full-on in this game. I think we'll have been able to identify the big weakness in this was catching them in transition because of how easily it's been done in a few games before this by both Leicester and Southampton. They quite constantly caught them out a lot in transition, which that was how the game was won, really, in my opinion, not merely through our concerted prep possession ourselves, although we did have some good attacks through that, but the main big chances of the game fell in the transitional moments, and Swansea weren't able to do the same thing to us.
Yeah, Will, do you have anything to add regarding Swansea's ability to get through our press?
Not massively. Williams, as was said, one of his sort of characteristics is the good build-up. And yeah, I wasn't too bothered because they were quite toothless. There was, I forget what minute, early in the, well, in the first half, there was their player running sort of down the right and Firpo stuck a foot out in the box. And so there was a sort of a half appeal for a penalty. That was the only sort of moment where I thought we could be in trouble here. Besides that, even when they did get at us, it was not massively panic stations, in my opinion. So wasn't that bothered about us not pressing. And they can play a few passes, but what came of it? Not much.
Yeah, and this isn't a Luke Williams pod, but all stats on, we are quite big fans of Luke Williams and what he did at Notts County. We appreciate some of the football that we've watched him play while following Notts County last season for reasons. And yeah, has this fixture changed your feelings towards Williams or on Williams, Martin?
Not just yet. If I was Swansea's fans, I wouldn't be worrying too much about it. I think this season is a bit of a write-off for them anyway. They can't really get playoffs now. There's so many teams who are in the hunt for it in better form than they are. And they're also probably too far away from the relegation spots to be at threat from relegation. So I think this season is probably a bit of a throwaway because a manager like Williams does need a full pre-season to get the team playing the way that he wants them to play. And probably also to bring in a few different profiles of players, which he's maybe missing from this side. I think there is definitely some good ball players in the side. But I do think that the big area where the lack is in defenders and actually defending the box, because quite a lot of times we were able to do it so easily, it seems. I realise that we do have much higher player quality than they do, both physically and technically, but there was still not really much for a fight put up in certain moments of this game, and I don't put that entirely down to Williams. He took the team in a pretty bad time because he's played in his time so far, Leicester, Southampton and us, and he's only been in the job about less than a month, so that's a pretty hard run of games. And he won at the weekend against a good Hull side, as we said, and they've had a very strong January window. So if I was Swansea's fans, I don't think there'll be many Swansea fans listening to this podcast, but I wouldn't write him off just yet. I still think he's got a good chance to pull things around probably next season now, though.
Yeah, Will, you're a Nottingham native, as we know, so you've probably got a bit more ties with Notts County opinions and stuff, so anything from you?
Not massively. I think the bits that they looked good at building up, we knew he was good at that. The bits where they looked vulnerable, Notts County did with the jumping the high line occasionally. I listened to the Jackcast the other day, which is a Swansea podcast, and they were saying even with the Southampton result, they're not that bothered because they have improved. And as was rightly said earlier, I think this season they're not in danger of going up or down. So give it another 6 months and if there's still problems, then get worried. But for now, it's not an issue. And the other thing I was going to note was when he was at Notts, as much as the football was good, it's hard to look past that their attack for National League was ridiculously good. So you know, he's lost that advantage in the championship, so it might take a bit of time to rework and find a way around not having Langstaff, who's a League One striker, in the fifth division, basically.
Yeah, or Ruben Rodriguez, who moved to Oxford after into League One after that season.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we've all kind of had kept our eye on Luke Williams as someone who we'd potentially like at Leeds, depending on how well he does progress through the levels. And yeah, I just think that the reason why his team managed to kind of play through is a little will be down to his coaching, as we've said. And I think that that's kind of probably what he's been focusing on, making sure that they're trying to play the right way in possession, especially if he doesn't have the defenders to do exactly what he wants to do out of possession with the high line. So it's probably best for, he's probably thought it's best for his side to retain possession and build up and try and have the advantage that way. And yeah, I think judge him maybe December time next season and see where he's at. And hopefully for Swansea, and hopefully for us, we're not in the division and we can kind of just follow Swansea with a good eye. And hopefully for Swansea, they'll be up and around top half pushing playoffs next season. But that's enough of us talking about Swansea and Luke Williams. And before we move on to the second half of our analysis, it is time for an ad break. But before that happens, I have to plug the Patreon. Otherwise, Tom Alderson won't let me go to Stockport County and won't be able to poison me with a pie. But don't worry, patrons, you don't have to listen to this part. Our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you an ad-free podcast. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. And that is three different tiers, which those tiers are what, Martin?
$1.99 for the base tier, which is the Brada tier, $3.99 for the middle tier, which is the Click tier, and for the next tier is the Pablo tier, obviously, at $4.99.
And if you want to find out more about our Patreon, then please visit Will.
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Ah, he's got it in one first time. Anyway.
Yes.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now let's go back to the analysis and let's talk a bit more about players rather than tactics. We had a question from Josie on Twitter, and Richard Lang did also ask this in the Discord. Don't worry, Richard, I won't forget you. Perreault seemed to play in a more advanced position last night. Do you think this is how he's being developed by the club, or more a function of how Swansea were playing, or was it just because Bamford came out and it was just a straight swap? What do you reckon for that one, Martin?
So yeah, it's an interesting one, is this, especially what Kurt mentions about the way that he was playing at Swansea, which obviously a lot of Leeds fans have assumed that he was playing in typical 9 way because of the amount of goals that he scored for Swansea, and that is quite natural. But if you ever watch Swansea play, he wasn't playing as a advanced number 9 in the similar way to what Bamford would play. He played a lot behind the striker. I feel like I've gone over this so many times and I'm getting deja vu massively here, but yeah, so that was the way he played at Swansea. I won't go into too much more detail about that. And I would like to see that he is being developed into being more of a classic centre forward who would look to lead a line and make runs beyond the centre backs, not dropping deep as often as what he does to help progress play. And I think last night's game was probably the best example of that we've seen from Perreault so far. He hasn't played often as a number 9. I think he maybe had three games where he's been playing as an out-and-out nine, possibly. Two in the cup and one this one in the league. And most of the other times when he's been playing, it's been with Routier as the nine or Bamford as a nine, and even once as Joseph as a nine ahead of him. So there's been a lot of different players who have played the nine. But I think this was, like I said, the best example of what Broke can do as playing nine. He was making a lot of good, intelligent runs beyond. He was still dropping deeper than what Bamford would do normally, but that was less often than what he normally is. And just finally, his out-of-possession work was probably the best I've seen from him. I do think that Swansea's back line and midfield aren't the most mobile, which probably did help his life in this out-of-possession, because he's not the most mobile of strikers. So that will have made his life a little bit easier, and probably why he did look a little bit better than normal. There's just a few times, especially in the second half, where I'm saw him quite battling with some of Swansea's players to get possession of them, which I just thought was a good sign, not just from the side of the pace of it, but also the aggressiveness that he was using in the pressing moments. So yeah, I was quite pleased with the way Perreault played this role. But regards to why he was playing in a more advanced position, I think it's probably down to Bamford pulling out late, because we will have had a plan in place. And you don't just quickly change the whole plan for the game based on one player being out. You have to have that player play the way that the other player was going to play. So Perreault had to try to play this game as much like Bamford as he was able to. Obviously, his own natural tendencies did come into play, and that's why he did drop quite deep at times, deeper than the halfway line a few times I spotted him, which is somewhere that Bamford would never come. He'd come a little bit deep, just drop it a little bit down to receive a ball, but he would never drop into our half. But yeah, that's how I saw it, and we're not sure if Will saw anything different.
Not really. I'd agree that I think he played as the nine just to minimise disruption so close to kickoff. And then, yeah, I don't think he'll ever be able to press in the same way that we've seen Bamford do for years, but there's no reason to think he couldn't improve from where he was at when he first joined us. And I think he has improved since then. And with hold-up play, teach him the behaviours and I think he'd be fine, because he's not the quickest, but his frame is solid enough that he should be able to hold the ball up. There was one midway through the second half out on the right wing, about the halfway line. He did particularly well to battle one of their players and eventually win the ball and lay it off to Ruta. And you think, that's a nice sign that maybe on the training ground they are saying, we want to see this from you, and maybe model off Bamford. So I think yesterday was a nice stepping stone, hopefully, of it's an improvement, but let's keep improving the hold-up play. Don't drop as deep as much as you'd like to. And then, yeah, if the worst comes to the worst and Bamford is out for a few games at any point, hopefully we wouldn't miss him as much as we might do now.
Yeah, I think for me, I see him playing nine a little bit different. Partly, yes, because obviously it was a last-minute change, but I feel like he may have just played nine anyway, even if it wasn't a last-minute change, because I think Routier is just doing so well at 10. I think it's that right now we can't really take Routier out of 10 with all the work that he's doing. Like, his off-the-ball work's really good. We've seen that in the numbers of duels he's winning and stuff like that when we did that deep dive the other week, Martin. And yeah, there was definitely times in the second half, I remember, on the right wing near the halfway again, but it must have been probably a different moment. And I just saw him kind of like pressing to cut out passing lanes for the options of Timon. And yeah, that was something which I've not really seen from him much as well. So I thought that he played it well. But I also think that the fact we were playing a team that left so much space for him helped as well with that. He had a bit more time to hold up the ball and stuff. They weren't as aggressive on the back line with the amount of space that they did leave in the end. So that's how I personally felt with it. And he obviously took his finish really well on his weak foot as well. Which, I think we've always said Perreault can go missing in games but get a goal. I think I heard somewhere that that's exactly what the Swansea commentators on Swansea's TV said. It's just the sort of player that he is, really. But players who are a bit more involved and have more moments that we see are our midfielders, who in 2024 have completed a ridiculous amount of passes and ridiculous completion percentage. Both are averaging over 90%. and they're both playing quite progressively within that. And so, Martin, do you put this down to the current midfield pairing working, so Kamara and Gruff, or do you think that it's more of a strength or lack of strength of the recent opposition and not putting them under enough pressure?
Yeah, it's a good question, is this. I think it's probably a combination of the two, but I'd maybe lean more towards the opposition strength because it has been quite weak. I mean, the best sides who we've faced in this run have been Norwich away, I'd say, and then this game against Swansea was another one which was kind of get me a little bit antsy about before. But then when I watched Swansea, I could see ways which we could hurt them, so I wasn't as worried. But I still didn't think it was going to be this much of a dominance, to be honest. But yeah, on the question, the midfield pair of Gruff and Kamara are working exceedingly well together at the moment, with Gruff being the one who's dropping deep and just playing passes about everywhere. He's doing whatever you'd want from a midfield pivot player. He's hitting the long diagonal balls very, very well and good pace on them and good accuracy. He's doing the little incisive small passes well. He's whatever pressure comes his way, he generally does deal with it. And out of possession as well, he's performing very well, stopping a number of key challenges, sometimes the ones which I wouldn't have expected him to get to, but he was able to. And then onto Kamara as well. He's also been doing very well, but I think he's sort of been left under the radar a bit, and we have spoke about this before. And I do think that he's performing equally as well, but he's playing a little bit further up the pitch. So he's seen a bit less of the ball. So he's not getting the big amount of numbers, which Gruff did, which was the last one, I think it was in the 90s.
92 attempted and 89 successful.
That's lovely numbers. So he's doing extremely well with that, but Murray is also doing extremely well. Like against Rotherham, he completed 100% of his passes. I mean, that's just an insane number for any midfielder to make, even if a number of them may have been backwards.
And even if one of them was nearly an own goal as well.
Yeah, we talked about that one. That was not the best of a completed pass. So I'm just very happy with the way the midfielders are working, but with the recent opposition strength, there just needs to be a little bit of a caveat on there, I think, that when we do play against some better midfields, ones who are equal to us physically, then it may be put under a bit more of a challenge, and then we'll maybe see a truer reflection of how good the midfield pair is.
And Will, I'm going to throw a slight curveball at you with this one. Obviously, we've just discussed the strength of those players, but can you tell me about Cruyff's right foot?
I could do it in about four words because it doesn't exist. It's fine for now, I think, that he is so left foot dominant because he does very well at orientating his body to still shield a player or to change the angle he's passing at to get the pass off with his left foot. But I do just wonder, against a better team who are going to press more, like, you know, Leicester game isn't too far away, against someone where the opposition are of a higher level. And then hopefully next season in the Premier League, it'll be interesting to see if that's something teams would look to exploit, because yeah, it's fine. He's clearly a very good player. You don't come from the Bundesliga to the Championship and not show that you've got quality, but just thinking ahead to scaling up next year, hopefully. It was just something I noticed the other day, that he is so one-footed, almost impressively so.
Yeah, I reckon it's impressively. So like said, whenever there's that hesitation or that pressure where they've forced him to maybe where you'd think that a pass on the right foot is the player to make, he moves his body around, evades that pressure and gets the pass away with his left foot anyway. So I won't throw you on a curveball this time. Who else do you think stood out last night, Will?
The two midfielders and then the attackers, but I feel like I could say that after every game. I thought Gray was really nice. There was a few moments where he came inside and was combining on little runs, which was making me think about, when Roberts is up to speed, as much as, you know, we've just given Gruev and Kamara huge amounts of praise, at some point I'd quite like to see Gray be given more than 5 or 10 minutes as a centre mid, just to see, you know, that was his position in the youth, so clearly he knows how to do it. And then perhaps you'd see his game be a bit more expansive than the role he's doing at the moment.
Yeah, and Martin, anyone else that Will didn't mention that stood out for you? Or do you want to talk about your forwards?
I think the forwards have had enough praise recently. We all know how good they are. And as you all know, I could talk about Routier for a long time. But I want to give praise to both of these centre-backs in this game. And they were both very good in everything that they needed to do, both in and out of possession, especially the few moments out of possession. One particular moment where we were caught a bit in transition, and Ampadu just put in a really lovely challenge just to put the ball out for a throw-in. And yeah, just everything that those two do at the moment seems to be working very well. I will say they didn't have a whole lot to deal with, because most of the attacks were generally dealt with before it got to the box area. But then in possession, they were doing everything that you'd want them to do. They were playing some good balls through forward. Roden was making some nice ball carries into the central space and then combining well with all the players on his side of the pitch. So yeah, just those are the two who I'd want to give some special praise for.
Yeah, I think we've basically praised the whole team there. Now, and we obviously discussed Perrault. And yeah, there was some slight gripes as well. I guess if we were to discuss, we might as well discuss the 11th player that we've not discussed yet. Or touched on, because we're not touching on the forwards. There was again some more slight gripes regarding Melier and his not distributing when he's collected it on to call for a quick transition, which it was a discussion in the Discord. And yeah, I know it's not on here, it's just one which has come to me now. I think I mentioned that I think it's more down to whatever game state we're in. I think we see it probably more often at 0-0 later on. But as soon as we've taken the lead, it's about controlling possession and slowing it down from Melier when he's got the ball to avoid losing it and then us being transitioned. I don't know if you two think any different.
Yeah, I can say something about that. So yeah, I think the full gripe was that he wasn't releasing the ball quick enough in transition, wasn't it? That was
when he's caught it. So we've obviously had a discussion last week, was it, after the Rotherham game or before the Rotherham game?
I believe so.
Where we discussed him punching and him in possession with baiting the press and using his feet. We didn't actually discuss when he does actually catch it, what he does with the ball there. So this is the last bit to cover, yeah, so, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So I was paying attention for this in particular after that little discussion. And actually the corner which eventually led to our first goal came from Melier releasing the ball quickly, which is quite amused me. So we know that it is something which we do. And he just did a nice like underarm throw. And I'm doing that action with my arms at the moment, like everyone can see me. He just did a nice little underarm throw, and then the ball was played further forward from there, and we got a corner from the action. So in a roundabout way, he was one of the reasons why we got there, because it was a good underarm throw, like caught sort of in between the Swansea players. It was nice. But then, yeah, there were other moments later in the game where he wasn't releasing the ball as quickly, and he was just sort of holding it, and just that's definitely game state reasons. Like, when we're 3 goals to the good, we don't need to risk sending the ball forward straight away and then getting caught in transition the other way. It doesn't make sense. It makes more sense to just kill a little bit of time. It's not very much time, but if it happens a few times, it adds up. So yeah, it's just one of those things, game state related, which will happen. And the more it is, sometimes he will release it quickly, sometimes he'll hold on to it for that little bit more. So yeah, it's nothing which concerns me at all. It just seems pretty usual for a goalkeeper to do depending on what the game state is.
Yeah, Will, anything to add? Or
I think it's an instruction from the coaching not to throw the ball immediately, because, you know, Melier played, what, the second half of the promotion season, and then the first season and a bit under Bielsa in the Premier League, and was throwing the ball out quickly, because there was a number of times that was a Bielsa. As good as we were in possession, the amount of times we'd catch someone from their corners and score, that was something Bielsa wanted to do. Whereas I think, in general, Farker has said to him, you know, as Martin said, let's just control the ball. Let's be a bit more measured with it, which as much as sometimes you're watching and you think, come on, there's a, you know, Firpo's away down the left, just play the ball. It's hard to get too annoyed, because if that is an instruction to hold on to it, we can hardly complain at the results, because it's what, 7 wins in a row and 1 goal conceded, was it?
Yeah, we're unbeaten in 2024. 7 league games, 7 wins, 17 goals, 1 goal conceded. We're in very, very good form at the moment. Will, is it time to get excited about automatic promotion, especially considering what we've seen from Southampton over the past 2 games, where, yeah, okay, they won 5 3 against Huddersfield, was it? But, you know, you conceded 3 goals to Huddersfield, and then you've conceded 3 goals to Bristol last night. They've conceded 6 goals to Huddersfield and Bristol City. Is it time to get excited?
Yes. Yes, it is. I don't know. I think football in general, the best bits of it is the joy. It's the excitement of what could happen. So it'd be miserable to spend all the time thinking, oh, well, they're good. So are we. Yeah, with their last 2 games, I saw the second half of the Bristol game yesterday, and like Southampton weren't particularly impressive. Not to say that they aren't good, because you don't go on a 20-odd game unbeaten run if you are, but you know, we're good as well. And I think we had such a bad start to the season that if that had been even average, you know, we'd have another few points. So yeah, I think we should be excited, and it could... There's a horrible scenario where we continue to be good, Southampton continue to be good, and we essentially have a playoff final on the final day at Elland Road, which I don't think I could bear.
I'd put my money on, if that happens, that the loser of that game loses the playoffs as well.
Yeah, I could see that quite. An Ipswich go up or something like that.
Martin, are you excited?
Yeah, I am. I wouldn't discourage anyone from being excited at the moment, because we're in such incredible form, and I don't want to put anyone down at all, because why should we? But that is something that we have done historically on this podcast, so it's maybe our job to maybe level expectations out a little bit, just to be the downers that we historically are. There is definitely a good reason to think why we have a very good chance of being promoted, but equally it could just be that a little wobble by Southampton and they continue on with their very good form. But football is something which can change so quickly on a dime that one bad result can lead to a series of bad results. And I fear that if it does happen to us, something similar could happen. So we've got a pretty tough game coming against Leicester. If that ended up being a very bad game where we lost, and that one's at home as well. So if we was to lose that one at home, lose our unbeaten run at Elland Road, as well as our 2024 unbeaten run, that would be a pretty bad hit for morale. So there is always a chance for any team to suddenly take a hit to the morale and to take a bit of a battering for a few games. So while I don't want to not like to discourage excitement, do it by being disciplined, as our great manager Neil Warnock would say.
As the current Aberdeen manager would say, yeah.
Yes.
I just think one of the things to consider regarding Southampton's big run, which I decided to have a look through, who they'd played within that run. So that started when they beat us 3-1, did that run. And in that time, the only top 6 team that they've played is West Brom, and who they beat 1-0. And the rest have more or less been bottom half teams that have been played in, and they've played like a couple twice and got through that. And then, yeah, the next 2 games for Southampton are West Brom and Hull. Hull's their game in hand. So they're not easy fixtures. I know that we've got Hull. I think we've got Hull at home, though. I think they've got Hull away. So I know that we do. Hull at home is probably one of our more difficult games of what's remaining, barring Southampton and Liverpool, Leicester. wrong team at top of the wrong table. So yeah, I think sort of like we might see Southampton actually drop more points in this second half of the season, just because they're playing more top half teams. So I don't think we'll see them. We might see that level out again. And it's worth noting that I've got a Southampton fan friend, and he's kind of like, to go 22 games unbeaten and still be absolutely nowhere near the top of the table, really, points-wise, is ridiculous with regards to Leicester. But he also has to remember that Leicester and Ipswich both started off ridiculously well. And when Southampton beat us 3-1, they were 15th because they'd had a bad start as well. So it's just one of those for us in Southampton that we've started slow and we're playing catch up. But yeah, like you said, it is building to that last game of the season at Elland Road, isn't it? Is there anything else that we've missed or that anyone wanted to discuss or bring up? Throw me a curveball or anything like that?
Yeah, it's a small comment. There's been a few things saying, is this football better than Bielsa's? No, it isn't. That's all I'll say.
Martin?
I'm not even going to dignify that question with a response, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I don't think this is enjoyable, but that could also potentially be, if I was to try and just kind of like argue for Farker, we have probably better players than we had when we had Bielsa in the Championship. And some teams obviously are setting up more teams are setting up in a way to stop us than what set up against us in that way again for Bielsa. So it was much more fun and much easier for us to enjoy Bielsa's football, I reckon.
Maybe the first season I'd agree with that, but in the second season that definitely wasn't the case. Loads of teams set up incredibly deep, and look at especially against Wigan, was it that game? Oh god, that wasn't a fun Bielsa game.
Even the start of the second season with, was it Swansea and Derby back to back home games, and they just sat on their own 6 yard box, and Steve Cooper claimed it was a tactical masterclass from him, and the Derby manager
You'll get Martin started.
No, I'm winding myself up as I say it, so I'll just stop. But Bielsa, I think you give him the players we've got now, we'd be there with Leicester, is my take. I love Bielsa more than anything, so I trust him to be as good as Leicester have been.
Yeah, I think it's two different conversations as to whether the football is better or whether this team is better. And I got asked the question actually at the weekend, and it's one which I think we've answered on the pod before again, but it was a while ago, which was, is the squad that we've got now better than the squad we had in the Premier League when we came down? And I reiterated the fact that I think individual talent-wise, we're probably a little bit lower than we were in the Prem, but right now we've got more balance and better balance within the squad. Anything to add on that comment? I mean, pretty much. I think that's exactly what we said, Martin, about 3-4 months ago.
Yeah, pretty much the same there. The squad which we came down with did have better, say, in certain areas, individual quality, but definitely the whole balance of the squad, the depth is better than where it was, with exception to the left-back area, but left-back was a problem in the squad which came down as well, really. So it's not really changed, having the left-back situation. But the rest of the squad, the makeup of it is much, much better, especially in midfield, which has been a problem for us for a number of years. And for that to finally be rectified feels quite good. But yeah, with that, I'd say this squad will have a good test if we do go up and see how many of these players are able to cut it in the Premier League. I do have faith in a number of them, but there is still obviously question marks over some as well.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully we get to see that tested out, but hopefully the test proves positive for us if we go up. But that's everything for today. I'll give you just a quick reminder to sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/ASAW Patreon. And yeah, as I said, that's everything for tonight. We'll be back very, very soon for a preview of the weekend's game against Plymouth, which is a 12:30 kickoff on Saturday, before anyone forgets, or a 12 o'clock kickoff, one of the two. It's lunchtime Saturday. But now all I have left to say is thank you, Martin.
Thank you as well, Tom.
Thank you, Will.
Yeah, thank you, mate.
And thank you to our dear listeners. Have a great end of the week, Thursday, Friday, and a good weekend. And enjoy the Plymouth game. Sayonara.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.